The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into the bonus show, a Friday. Gary, how are you?
Well, then they should request. Forget about all the niceties and saying hello and all that. We got all this stuff going on. Yada, 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 blah, 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 blah. Then they should request in San Francisco a $60 an hour living wage. Where are the liberals? I thought they cared.
Well, we said this. How long have we been saying this? They've been talking about, the $15 an hour. In California, it's a state that went to $15 an hour, right?
Right.
And we were like, well, no. No, 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 no. You need to jump right away to what it would cost to live there.
Maybe we should explain what we're talking about.
All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. It's a bonus show. He's Gary. Yes. I'm Eric. Blah, 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 blah. We're still getting over colds and yada, yada.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a Friday show.
All that Fortune did this. Fortune.com. They're shrinking middle class by the numbers. All right, and this is according to data from the Economic Policy Institute, and the range is between 1973 and 2017, where they talk about the productivity of the economy grew 77%, the average compensation rose only 12.4%. All right, so they're getting into the whole shrinking of the middle
class. That doesn't include benefits, though.
I'm not sure where the data lies on that. I'd have
I'm
to look
almost
at their
positive
numbers.
It doesn't include.
Yeah. Okay.
Benefits.
And so then they get into a chart, a minimum, and it's a map of the U.S., okay? A minimum hourly wage to afford a two-bedroom apartment for rent.
In San Francisco?
Well, it's all over. Okay. They do major cities, or not all of them are major cities. They do all the states here. They go through it, right?
All right.
So in our state, Austin, $24 an hour. San Antonio, $19.25 an hour, all right? Houston is $20.50 an hour. In San Francisco, $60 an hour.
Then if they truly care in San Francisco, all of our great liberal friends listening in San Francisco this morning, you should be demanding $60 an hour.
Right. Well, remember several years ago when Bay Area Rapid Transit went on strike and they were making the point then, and I forget what the average wage was, but they said, look, we have to live close in order for this whole thing to work. Commuting's really not a huge option, although I'm guessing for most of them these days, several years later, they probably don't have a choice. But they were saying we want an increase in our wages because we can't afford the cost of living in the Bay Area.
Well, you know, that was one of the justifications for high-speed rail.
Mm-hmm.
That people could live 100 miles away from, or 150 miles away from San Francisco and still commute.
Right, yeah.
And they said, well, yeah, but the subsidy each way,
mm-hmm.
somebody's still paying for
There's
that.
Somebody else still
right.
paying for that.
Right.
Right, right, right. And so $60 an hour. Well, we had the story the other day on what it takes to rent a one-bedroom, rent is for one bedroom.
$3,700 a month in San Francisco. Two bedroom was $4,600.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, $60 an hour. That's what it takes to rent a two bedroom.
By the way, that's because of policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one point that I was making. Look at the different policies in all the different areas. And in California, it is obviously, I mean, they do, San Jose, they do Santa Cruz and Los Angeles. Los Angeles comes in at $31 a night. See, it's almost half. $31.98 an hour is what it takes to rent a two bedroom in Los Angeles. So if you're in the Bay Area, move to Los Angeles. It's just ridiculous. San Diego.
What about you? They got Portland in there?
San Diego's even higher, $34.92.
Wow.
Let's see, Portland.
I'd just like to see Portland because of their urban growth boundary.
Yeah, Portland is $25.57 an hour.
All right.
So it's close to, or just it's higher than Austin, Texas, but within that range. I say that because Austin, Texas is probably the most liberal hot spot, maybe?
Yes, yes.
In Texas?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. You look around the country, you know, Birmingham, $16.96 an hour. And I would also have questions as to, in the breakdown of all this, all right, what are you considering in all of that? All right. You're saying renting a two-bedroom. What else are you including in that?
Well, again, we could spend the whole day going through it and probably picking apart whether it's accurate. My point was simply, when I heard you talk about San Francisco, that they should be screaming for $60 an hour in San Francisco and do it now and demand it now and get it done now and then see what happens.
Well, and my only curiosity in looking at this map was, all right, where does it range? Forget about what all they're including. What are the differences between the markets? And, you know, again, we knew California would be higher, and the Bay Area would be the highest, which is exactly the case. Which is why the Census Bureau, according to the Census Bureau, the highest rate of poverty in the U.S. is in California.
Right. And we had said this a long time ago, remember, because that was, you know, we had looked at it and we said, wait a minute, you're not counting the cost of living. And the only thing that matters is the difference between what you make and the cost of what it takes of the things that are necessary to live. What are the basic cost of that? It's the difference between what you, it's a difference, it's what you have at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. It's not what you make, because that's how they were rating, remember, pre looking at the cost of living and the cost of the cost of living. They were just looking at people's salaries. Well, the poverty rate is less here because people make this. Well,
right,
you can't.
Right.
You can't, we knew it was unfair. We knew it wasn't completing the sentence. And as soon as they changed that in the census, boom, California went to number one.
Yeah.
It was like, well, that's not unexpected.
No.
We got a great show ahead. Anti-Semitism alive and well in the mainstream of the Democrat Party. And saw a lot of screaming and yelling yesterday. Why? Why are you screaming and yelling about it? I mean, if you're on the right, I mean, this is duh.
Yeah, we know the hypocrisy.
The identity politics that have existed, in the Democrat Party, the stereotyping that exists. It was a Representative Clymer who came out and was discounting, you know, saying that Omar is closer to the bigotry of the bigotry that she has felt, which is further away from people that have relatives that were killed in the Holocaust. And it was like, oh, so now you're dismissing the Holocaust. I mean, it was the most bizarre day. But if you look at somebody like Clymer, if you look at a lot of the liberal black leadership in the Democrat Party, they are some of the most bigoted people. They're the ones that say, if you don't think this way as a black person, if you don't think the way that we think, then you're not truly black. You and I have brought that out for the longest time. It is the absolute pinnacle of bigotry that exists from the left of the Democrats, and it has for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. They've been getting away with it, and finally, as I think we should refer to them now, Ocasio-Cortez, Representative Omar, we should refer to them as, I think this, the Democrats should come up with this classification as Cub Congresspersons now. Remember, there used to be Cub reporters. You weren't a full-fledged reporter. You were a Cub reporter. They should be Cub Congresspersons because the leadership is always making excuses for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Omar, she really didn't understand what she was saying. You know, she's new here and all of this. And so she really didn't know what she was saying. Okay, fine. They're going to be Cub Congress. They can't be full-fledged congresspersons yet because they still can't figure out how they think and they still can't identify anti-Semitism, racism. They still don't have a clue about that yet. They're adults that haven't got to that point. So they should be Cub Congresspersons.
Yes. Good luck.
It's such a lodo.
And they think that this is working for them. You know, here's what's interesting. Huh. And you and I, you've been asking the question for, weeks here. Where is the average Democrat, the rank and file voter? What are they thinking right now? And we brought yesterday, the six people that CNN, Democrats that CNN had on. And what I wonder is if it's not working with middle America, if we're going to talk about geography, if it's not working with the flyover states, then is it working with the average Democrat? If it, something like what happened on Thursday, which is just a, it's because there, I don't know if it's resonating at all. So you have those who support Omar. You have those who think she didn't say anything wrong and she's right. We support her. You have people on any given topic and position.
Well, that would have been David Duke yesterday.
Yeah, right. The kind of support of the ideas that are far left and extreme. We've been talking about the 2020 season. So if that's the case, did they satisfy that group, right, in this resolution thing? No.
No, no.
Did they satisfy the people who are critical thinkers?
No.
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 Who did they satisfy?
Nobody.
Exactly. I'm talking about on the left. Forget about the right. The right's not a part of this. You had Republicans voting, yeah. We hate hate. Of course, we all hate hate. Steve King voting present. I think what? Only 23 voted no?
Yes.
So you look at it, and the question is, and I know it's only a resolution anyway.
They voted no because they said it's a sham.
Of course.
You're doing this to hide the true anti-Semitism of one of your own.
Exactly.
You're trying to hide what's going on in your own party.
Right.
You won't confront. And this is the beautiful thing of it, because you and I were in the kitchen earlier, and I said, so let me get this right now. So they put a resolution condemning hate because they won't condemn the hate of one of their own,
right,
who keeps throwing out hate speech that they won't confront. So they put out a general umbrella of a resolution condemning hate because they won't condemn hate.
Yeah. This goes.
And I went, do I have this right, Eric? And you were like, yeah, you think you got it there.
Well, and it's like saying, okay, kids, the teacher's just looking at the class going, okay, this person is in trouble. So we all need to show up after school. That's basically what it is. And that whole idea is, and so what is driving that? If you're the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, then what is it that's pressuring you to the point that you're not going to be very direct in the language in this resolution?
Anti-Semitism is winning and becoming part of the mainstream of the Democrat
that's
Party.
That's my whole point. You have people that are supporting Omar.
Yes.
You that's can't why. Call her out politically. You are damaged if you do.
Right.
Steve King, another story.
Look, you and I said this back in early 2009,
mm-hmm.
when Jewish leaders came out and said, we can't believe that Obama's saying these things against Israel. Well, what's going on? We voted for him. We thought, weren't you paying attention?
Right.
You can't be a Jewish leader and be surprised at where the Democrat Party has been going. They've been going there for the longest time. The only way you can go there is if you put your blinders on because you agreed ideologically with something that they were doing.
Right.
But the anti-Semitism has been growing all along, and yesterday was a huge turning point because it was really the official turning point of where the Democrat Party said, the mainstream, the leadership of the Democrat Party said, we no longer can condemn anti-Semitism. We'll put out a general proclamation that we do while not actually addressing the situation when it happens in our own party and giving every type of excuse instead of confronting it. Well, you know, this is what I loved yesterday. Well, this is an opportunity for us to have expanded discussions on this. No, there's no expanded discussions needed.
If you didn't call the person out that was responsible right away,
there is no discussion to be had.
Then where do you believe you're going to go?
Right.
You're going to call her out later? No. No, you're not. You're not going to do anything about it. Discussions. What discussions? In the hallways? Texts? What kind of discussion are you going to have?
Twitter.
We'll tweet about it. Private message only, of course. But here's the thing. If you were going to have a discussion, why didn't you put that in the language? Why didn't you get specific in the language?
Because
what kind of discussion are you going to have? It's going to be
none.
We hate hate.
Right.
Anyone who loves hate, raise their hand.
Yeah. Well, they actually won't address the incident that happened.
No.
And they won't criticize the actual incident. That's the thing that I got. I'm glad because you and I really didn't talk about this in our pre-show meeting, but I believe we both came to the same conclusion as probably did millions of other Americans. Yesterday was the day that the leadership realized that anti-Semitism is now mainstream in the Democrat Party.
Yes. Alive and well.
It's alive and well.
Right.
And now we acknowledge that it's mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Love to hear from you, 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Also coming up, the best headline of the day. You'll love this one. Manafort gets 47 months. The basketball brackets are good for the company and employees, most managers say. In a new study, Lindsey Graham kicking off an expanded FISA abuse probe with a huge Department of Justice document request. It's going to be interesting to see because now Barr is Attorney General. Will a lot of the documents get quicker to what now the Senate wants?
I guess I didn't consider that. Your mind goes back to the House oversight committees, right?
Yep.
And in this case, you have to remember, and of course, with the Judiciary Committee, who's the chairman of that committee now? Lindsey Graham.
Yep.
So between Lindsey Graham and Barr, could we see things being expedited, or at the very least, the response being met?
Yes. Hawaii lawmakers want Congress to consider repealing the Second Amendment. Mm. The Democratic presidential candidate who says the basic income proposal is not socialism. Really? And a government-funded project in Sweden, since we talked Sweden earlier this week, pay a person to do nothing.
Right. Oh, radio. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Some significant winter weather is expected over the next 24 to 48 hours from two different systems that'll be moving through the Midwest, Great Lakes, and Northern Plains states. We'll use I-70 as a dividing line, and south of there we'll see all rain. North of 70, we'll see snow, but there is a band of mixed precip that will be a problem today from portions of northern Nebraska and southern Iowa. And as we move through the day today and get into Saturday, we'll see that situation continue for mixed precip in portions of central Illinois moving over to central Indiana. Look for a lot of the major cities in the south, including Atlanta, under the threat of showers through Sunday. In the West, we'll get some much-needed drying in California beginning tomorrow. Snow remains in the higher elevations of the central and southern Rockies. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
the bonus show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. I saw that our colleague Ben Shapiro on Twitter yesterday, I'm paraphrasing, but said, where's everybody on the left today on Twitter?
Right. Exactly.
Everybody's completely silent. Nobody's, you know, nobody's saying anything.
Well, it's going on. You know, basically making the point, if Omar was a Republican, it would be all, you know, everything. And in the past, Republican stories of similar nature, it was huge. It was huge. Right. The breaking news on it was nonstop. Okay, fine. What about this?
We had no problem talking about Representative King.
Right.
We had no problem when he came out and said, well, this is what I really meant. And we said, sorry, that doesn't wash.
That doesn't hold water with us.
I don't know any major conservative talk show host that wasn't ready to immediately denounce what was going on. Now, I will say that there are some on the left that have done that. On Morning Joe, they did it,
mm-hmm.
which was, I mean, that's the, you know, that's on MSNBC.
Right,
so I know they did it, and others also did it and called it, you know, reprehensible and in essence said what the Democratic Party is doing is cowardice. But as we've said, actually it isn't. It's that they agree with it. It shows its mainstream. I want to play just a little bit of Nancy Pelosi's press conference when she had to address this. Here we go.
Madam Speaker, yes, ma'am. Do you think that Ilhan Omar understands why her comments were problematic? And what happens if this happens again?
Well, first of all, thank you for the question.
Do you think, before we go any further, do you think Donald Trump understands that the things that he said were problematic?
Do right, you think he understands?
Yeah, let's go on. Let's continue.
I don't think that that the Congresswoman is perhaps appreciate the full weight of how it's heard by other people, although I don't believe it was intended in any anti-Semitic way. But the fact is, if that's how it was interpreted, we have to remove all doubt, as we have done over and over again. We're working now on a resolution to see when we bring it to the floor that will, again, speak out against anti-Semitism.
So there you go. And that's why we came up with the idea that the Democrats should have cub congresspeople.
You know,
congresspeople that are elected but aren't ready, and so therefore, like a cub reporter, they have cub congress. She is a, Representative Omar is a cub congresswoman.
Yes, and they don't get to drive without another adult in the car.
Yes. We need to make sure, because if you see her, Nancy Pelosi, if it was interpreted
right
as anti-Semitic, because it was anti-Semitic.
Yes.
And this is where, and again, I'm not angry at this, because we have said this, that the bigotry in this country and the intolerance in this country, and we've said this for a significant period of time, if you've been a listener to this show, and we've probably been on the forefront of calling out Democrats for their bigotry and intolerance over and over and over and over and over again. What happened yesterday was that it went mainstream. The leadership of the Democrat Party cannot fight the incredible bigotry, intolerance, the anti-Semitism, and hate that is now taking over their party. The leadership has put up the white flag and said, hate now rules our party, and we can't stop it. It's important to know that. Now, again, I said that with passion, because it should be known and it should be said with passion that a major party now endorses it, not just tolerates it, but will not confront it. And, you know, we should know, but I'm not surprised by it.
No. And it's the dismissive, it must be your problem approach from the left.
Right. If you
misinterpret Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that was a joke. See,
right.
That she didn't really mean that, what she put on her website. No, that was a mistake. That was a joke. You're taking everything seriously.
We didn't know that they were stand-up comedians.
Well, no, but this is...
We laugh a lot, but we didn't know that that was her official
But this
role.
Is where the party is. They get away with it going, oh, no, 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 they're just young. They don't know the weight of their words. No, 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 no. You are taking it wrong. If you think it's offensive, that is your problem. We're sorry that you don't understand where they're coming from. It's all about you. The problem is you, America. You don't understand it. Bunch of morons. That's the approach. This is not their problem at all. It's yours. You're the problem. And the 23 Republicans that voted against it, they're bigots. No, they're not. You put up a heaping, steaming pile of smelly garbage as a resolution that did not call out the direct problem. Let me ask you, Speaker Pelosi, why'd you put this resolution up for a vote? Where'd that come from? Did you just wake up the other day magically and go, you know what we need to do? We need to condemn hate. We haven't done that lately. We've done a lot of things, but we haven't condemned hate. We need to just, I don't know, out of the blue sky, just condemn hate. Lump it all together. All hate. And that's exactly what it was. That's exactly what that was about. It was a resolution. First of all,
to give cover to her, to Omar's anti-Semitism,
not call her out, pretend like you did something. Okay, great, Speaker Pelosi, you condemned hate. Now, what are you going to do about Omar? You may think that you're getting away with it because the vocal part of your party and support for your party is that loudest part is okay with her words. You may think you're getting away with it. And you know what? It really doesn't even get down to necessarily the anti-Semitism. It's not just, let me rephrase that. It's not just the anti-Semitism. The approach to it, the response to it officially from the party was pure hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. It was garbage. It was nothing. So you've got twofold. I said weeks ago, the Democrats are going to have to separate themselves from Omar. Nope. Nope. Is she off the committee?
Nope.
No. Did they do anything with the resolution? Did they call her out with the resolution?
Nope.
No. So they're not going to separate themselves from her. The party's not going to separate themselves from this kind of behavior. So what they're saying then, it's okay. This behavior will continue. That's the message. It will continue.
And the other message is anti-Semitism is now acceptable in the mainstream of the Democrat Party. This isn't fringe.
Right.
Because in every party, and we've admitted, in every party you can find some whack job. But it's when you have that whack job to clamp down on that whack job and address it.
Right.
They have decided to accept it and excuse it.
Yeah.
Which means they have now, it is now in anti-Semitism, has now been accepted and you can promote it in the Democrat Party. That's a message that's been sent without fear of any punishment, which then it becomes part of what you are as a party. It becomes part of the platform.
Well, because now,
and remember, now,
right,
her being on the Foreign Relations Committee,
mm-hmm,
means that is officially now part of the platform because, as was explained yesterday, as we explained yesterday, the party leadership picks people that agree with them to put them on certain committees.
Right.
Omar's statements now and what she believes are now an official part of the Democrats on the Foreign Relations Committee. It's anti-Semitic. And
so ask yourself about just as we go down the road here, Omar makes similar comments down the road. Anybody can believe that there's going to be any kind of other resolution, any kind of further action? Why would you believe that? Why would you believe that? What you did is you empowered that kind of behavior.
Yes. You enabled the behavior.
Yep.
That's what you did, which means you've accepted it as a leadership. You don't believe you can fight it. So if you can't fight it, if you can't fight them, join them. And that's what Nancy Pelosi did yesterday.
Yes.
And the leadership of the Democrats did yesterday by agreeing to that resolution. They have said, look, you know, that's now part of the platform of the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-Semitism will be accepted as a part of the mainstream of our party.
Yes.
That's the message that was sent out.
And it's not going to change.
It's a shame, but again, I would rather it be, I would rather them not try to hide it and be truthful to who they are so the American public knows and the opposition knows exactly what they are and what they will accept. And I'm not surprised because you and I have said this for the longest time. The identity politics, the judging people by bigotry, by prejudice, by stereotype, the Democrats have been the leaders of that. And we started saying that a long time ago when we said, look at what they say about conservative blacks. If you're a conservative black, you're not really black. Why? Because all blacks must think this way. They have gotten away with that for decades.
Yeah. Yep.
And we started hitting them a long time ago on that, saying, there it is. You want to see the... Because if all blacks think alike, where do you think white privilege came from? All whites think alike. All whites have this thing. You can't argue because you're white. You can't discuss this because you're white. Only this color can discuss this. This color believes this way. This color believes that way. It's the identity politics. And then it goes to religion. And that's her comment on the Jews paying off, the Jewish lobby paying off. Jews have the money and pay off people to get whatever they want. People don't really agree with the Jews. The Jews just pay off these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you support Israel, you're expecting me to have dual allegiance.
Right.
That somehow that anybody who is Jewish who supports Israel has a dual allegiance to America and Israel and can't be a U.S. American citizen Jewish person who feels that Israel is doing what is correct and is a democratic republic in an area where there aren't a heck of a lot of democratic republics. Where totalitarian leads, but no, it has to be a dual allegiance. And so those are the statements made by hers and others in the Democrat Party that shows that it's fully now accepted that anti-Semitism is now allowed. You can promote it without any fear of punishment in the Democrat Party. It has gone mainstream. Tell us where we're wrong. You can't. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Trent Eye Radio, he's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. We'll get to some of your calls and comments. A lot of people wanting to get aboard about Representative Omar and her anti-Semitic comments and the Democrat Party not willing to confront her over it and making excuses for her, which, in our opinion, means now that anti-Semitism has become acceptable and tolerable mainstream within the Democrat Party because the leadership will not fight it. So we will get to that coming up in a little bit. Manafort gets 47 months. Lindsey Graham kicks off an expanded FISA abuse probe with a huge Department of Justice document request. And, you know, and you and I were talking about this. Now that Barr is in there, will they be able to get a ton of information in the Senate that the House wasn't able to get and the House won't try to get now?
Right.
Since they're now under the Democrats, that they don't dare go in to find out the rot with inside of the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the intelligence agencies. But is now the Senate under Lindsey Graham going to do that? And that would be quite powerful if it came from Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, I think so, too, because you look at the energy behind Lindsey Graham, and I guess the history of Barr and what we know of his line of thinking, and certainly I think the fact that the president chose him, it's believed widely that he's not going to be a Jeff Sessions. Only time will tell if that's right. True. But with a new head there at the Justice Department, could you have between those two, Chairman Graham and AG Barr working together, and the cooperation from the Attorney General and insistence that those documents be turned over quicker? I think there's a case to be made there.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. And then it kept going yesterday afternoon through yesterday evening. You know that Meghan McCain was on The View and got emotional.
Right.
With the whole Omar statements and all that. She said, it's very dangerous, very dangerous. I think we collectively, as Americans on both sides, what Ilhan Omar is saying is very scary to me. It's very scary to a lot of people. I don't think you have to be Jewish to recognize that. But instead of responding directly to McCain, Omar retweeted a post that criticized McCain for fake outrage and referred to past statements attributed to McCain's late father, U.S. Senator John McCain. Intercept columnist and Al Jazeera host Madai Hassan said, quote, and this is what she tweeted, McCain's late father literally sang bomb, bomb, bomb Iran and insisted on referring to his Vietnamese captors as the G word, read the post. He also said, lest we forget, he gave the world Sarah Palin. So a little less fake outrage, over Omar. Omar's retreat was praised by many of her followers as a sign that she was fighting back, but the retreat also attracted more negative attention to Omar just hours after the U.S. House voted in favor of an anti-hate resolution that initially inspired by the Minnesota Democrat. So, going after John McCain again shows that she doesn't want to stop. She knew exactly what she was saying.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
And so this isn't going to stop for the Democrats.
No.
She's not going to.
No.
What you've done is enable her. Look,
yes. Yep.
If you believe that you've put the reins on her and just a few hours later she's retweeting something that insults John McCain, I would have to tell the leadership of the Democrats, you do not have her under control.
And it's likely you're not going to do anything in the future when whether it's a tweet or any other comment in the media during an interview. This is the norm. This is the norm now. This is mainstream Democratic Party. Thank you, Nancy Pelosi.
Right. And Omar didn't go after what Meghan McCain said.
Right.
She went after her father.
Her father.
Who wasn't a part of the debate to begin with.
Right.
And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And again, this shows she believes now. Shall I dare say it? She believes now she's the boss.
Oh, no, no, no. They've empowered her with this bogus resolution. With the zero action from it. It's in some ways, it's just like the HQ2 thing with AOC. She was empowered by that. She beat the richest man in the world.
Right.
If there's going to be an activist politician today, you're going to have your victories. Otherwise, you'll have no following. Because that's the way it happens. You have whatever victory it might be. And this was a victory for Omar. Because she was not called out. She was not called out at all. And won't be.
Nope.
And knows that.
And now she feels enabled to continue on her path of anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Watch it. Let's watch where this goes. It's obvious where it goes. Has she changed at all since her comments of the past? No.
No.
She has simply got more intense and more direct.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Stuart, New York City. Stuart, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Stuart. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Eric and Gary. So, you know, I'm Jewish, born in New York, and I think the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi better take a look over the Atlantic Ocean. The United Kingdom Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn, who spoke to AOC recently, Jewish members of their Congress have been resigning in droves, and they're going to lose the next election. And she may have a short-term gain with her radical progressive members that put a gun to her head, but in the long term, if many liberal, you know, people wanted to vote for a Democrat House because they didn't like Trump, well, this is what they're getting in return. This is what they're getting in return now. Rampant, virulent anti-Semitism. And when Omar and all of them say, oh, we want to, it's just about Israel. We want to talk about Israel. Baloney. This is a canard going back 2,000 years, over 2,000 years of history prior to 1948. When Israel became a state, every Jew knows this has gone on for several thousand years about dual loyalty. This is way before Israel became a country. We know about this in our history. So Nancy Pelosi never should have appointed her. She must have had a reason why she wanted to appoint her to appease the progressives, and she won't remove her. And how dare they point anything to the Republicans? McCarthy got rid of or stripped Steve King of his chairmanships. Committee seats, and she won't do the same, and they deserve to lose big time in November of 2020. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, sir. Well, yeah, I think that's what Morning Joe put. He goes, the today's I'm doing this from memory. Today's Democrats, and there was a picture of Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, right.
In the Labour Party in the UK, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's the guy that hosts the Morning Joe on MSNBC. Everybody knows it's there. Everybody. I'm telling you right now. You have, and Nancy Pelosi may have come out with, well, she doesn't know. They're just going, how do we get out of this? And then when she retreated last night and went after Meghan McCain, and went after John McCain,
yeah.
And goes after John McCain.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter whether she retweets it, that when you retweet something, that becomes your tweet.
Right.
That means that's your defense. Your argument is that John McCain was somehow a racist of some sort or bigoted of some. Mm-hmm. That's not going to fly. That's not going to fly too well. So it shows that she's ready to debate and continue to defend herself over and over and over again, because now she feels enabled. And that's why we have said the message that came out yesterday is that now the mainstream Democrat Party, the leadership, the mainstream now endorses, tolerates, and to the point of endorses anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
We will not confront it directly. We will ignore it. We'll come up with a resolution that gives anti-Semitism and the person who promotes it cover within our party.
And I think on a different level, you think about too, because the criticism of John McCain singing "Bomb Iran," right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was to the tune of "Barbara Ann" by the Beach Boys. But the idea going forward, think about if something escalated with Iran. any major Muslim nation. What's going to be the thought from the Democrats? Say what you will about those who say, all right, we shouldn't get involved in this. It's not our war, right? Isolationists in general. And they're isolationists. It has nothing to do with it being Syria or Afghanistan or Iran. It's just, hey, that's not our war. But if there's a direct threat, it becomes inevitable at some point that a nation like an Iran has the ability to attack Western interests. I mean, we already know about their sponsorship of terrorism and everything else. But how long before, no, that's just racist. You can't do that because. I mean, think about that. As a nation, we have to be ready to defend ourselves from all enemies. But for how long, the left has refused to say the words Muslim extremists. Now, those words qualify, the extremists qualifies everything there that you need to know about that situation.
Right.
Because they're not all, we're not talking about sovereign nations. That's the whole point. Now, with Iran, we would be. But when we talk about groups that are made up of Muslim extremists, the left won't say that. They won't use those words.
No.
So that was the opening of the door years ago when they refused to do that. And now we're to the point of anti-Semitism being mainstream in the Democratic Party. And how long before, well, if there's a threat from a sovereign nation, a majority Muslim sovereign nation, no, we can't do that. That's racist.
Ocasio-Cortez already went there.
Exactly.
9/11.
Yes.
We shouldn't have. We shouldn't have attacked.
And so
back.
So now put that into action.
Right.
And as a nation, in the event of war, in the event of an inevitable threat from a sovereign nation like Iran, you're going to have members of Congress saying, no, we're not going to war with them. That's racist. Not about isolationists. This isn't our war kind of argument. You know, maybe from a Rand Paul. No, this is racist.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on trip planning. Nature often has a mind of its own, and typically it tends to have a negative effect on truck drivers. Before heading out for a trip, check the forecast for potentially adverse conditions. There's always a chance that predicted stormy weather will dissipate, but it's still always better to be prepared than caught off guard. Remember to download a reliable weather app and plan your route to try to avoid inclement conditions. After learning what might be ahead, be sure to pack an appropriate emergency kit to help you deal with any weather-related problems. When you hit the road, remember to slow down if the conditions dictate to avoid accidents and breakdowns. It's safety first and everything else second. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I nearly spit up my coffee here during the break. I was just going through Twitter, and I saw our colleague Ben Shapiro's tweet from, would have been yesterday, early afternoon. The Democratic excuses so far for Representative Omar. Are you ready? Number one, Omar is a benighted ignoramus who must be educated like a small child. Number two, Omar's open anti-Semitism is actually just anti-Israeli rhetoric.
Yeah.
Number three, Trump.
Right, exactly.
Number four, maybe she's anti-Semitic, but the Holocaust was a long time ago, and she's from Somalia.
Like, well, yeah, right.
That's basically what for the Clymer, Representative Clymer comments yesterday, which I went, well, that doesn't even make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the nothing makes sense when you create this big. It's you know what's funny? It's like a really bad magician that just throws down a smoke bomb. Ta-da! See, it all disappeared.
Yeah,
we didn't see anything. I know, but it disappeared, right? You can't see it anymore. The rabbit was here a second ago. Yeah, but all you did was throw a smoke bomb, so I couldn't see where you put the rabbit. They didn't do anything.
Yeah, it was a smoke bomb. You're right. It was cover because they couldn't deal with it.
Right.
Let's go to Brent in Ashburn, Virginia. Brent, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
A little off topic. I have a little prediction, I guess, for the Democrats in 2020. These younger Democrats like AOC and Omar with their comments and their increasing amount of press time, they're stealing the limelight from the old guard Democrats like Pelosi and Schumer that are used to getting the media time. I would not be surprised if they face some primary challenges, and they would likely be funded by the old guard Democrats that want their power back.
I'm not saying that won't happen, but that was really the narrative about a month ago. And since a month has passed by, the leadership will not confront those two. You have maybe a couple of comments, but there is nothing that comes from the leadership saying, look, this is pure idiocy when it comes to the Green New Deal. With AOC, you have every single one of the Democrat candidates running for president that have endorsed her deal. So she's building a power base there, and I think what you saw yesterday was complete capitulation of the Democratic leadership to the radical left. Maybe a month ago, your narrative might have had more credibility than it does right now. I'm not saying they won't try to do it, but when we get to 2 years from now, or a year and a half from now, when it's time to run again, I can't make that guarantee at all, especially how far the Democrat Party has evolved in just a little over a month and a half.
Well, and I think you look at the it's almost like a populist faction of the far left, right? The populist moves, like the HQ2 thing. That lifted her, that brought her up in terms of power, in terms of her having leverage going forward. That was a huge event for her because of the populist Democrats there in her district that voted for her, support her, and talk about the big, when you talk about the rich, he's the richest. There is no one richer than Jeff Bezos. No one. And when you start maligning the rich.
Well, his ex-wife will soon be.
Well, she will be equally as
or his
rich.
Wife. I don't know if they're ex yet.
Yeah, as soon to be ex-wife. But no one tops him. No one on the planet. So he's the big evil, and she won.
You and I were both looking at the video. We played it as audio because we can't play video. We're radio. But from CNN yesterday, from the focus group, the Democrats who all voted for Hillary. And that meant they were old school. They didn't vote for Bernie. They've all voted for Hillary. Mm-hmm. And they are all completely, totally behind AOC. Completely.
Yeah.
Why? They called her intelligent. Now, as we said, when we played it, you realize there wasn't one critical thinking comment that came from any of them. What they were looking for was the new rock star.
That was it. It was all about her.
Right.
Her.
And she fights.
Not her ideas.
She fights. She's intelligent. They can't tell you why she's intelligent.
No.
They can't tell you anything except the fact that they believe that they have found the new rock star.
And they didn't mention any of the ideas. They didn't...
Not one
of them even mentioned the Green New Deal.
No.
Did they?
No.
So if you...
Not in the audio that we played.
Right.
They might have when they were talking about Biden. But they earlier in it had discounted Biden, Sanders, Hillary, none of them. They don't want any of them. They're not even considering them. They want the new ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the new breed of Democrats. And that happens in political parties where they'll say, okay, time to get rid of the old and go with the new. The old keep losing, time to go with the new.
Right.
Doesn't matter how insane they are, this is what we're going to go with.
And you know, you could have maybe a month ago, you could have, or you know, end of January, you could have put some thought into, I guess, and discussed the idea of her not winning her district, Ocasio-Cortez, in November of next year. Now, that could still happen. That could, you know, there could be a challenger and she loses. But does anybody believe that she's done?
Could you imagine a John Boehner or a Paul Ryan capitulating to a first-term congressperson who said something that was racist in any way or form or manner?
They'd be done.
They would never do that, ever.
Making overnight radio great again. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 of Red Eye. Yeah, to the last caller, that was a narrative about a month ago that the Democrats were, you know, looking and saying, look, somebody like Ocasio-Cortez, we need to go back and you know, get that district. That was a month ago. A lot's happened in that month. And, Eric, you made the note about Amazon headquarters, HQ2 or 1, whatever it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And the fact that that was the big victory for her. And since then, the Green New Deal has come out. From what I know, because Inslee did, we know that, because he was on. I'm trying to think of, I think everyone so far has endorsed the Green New Deal. So that comes directly from her. You don't have that happening. You never have a freshman congressperson coming in and all the presidential candidates for the next year endorsing their plan. It doesn't happen like that. They are looking for a savior. There is a, and that's what you saw from that focus group on CNN. Right. That's why loved her. They're looking for their next rock star. It's all about imagery. We played the audio for you last night from that focus group of Democrats who voted for Hillary. None of it was on an issue.
No.
You couldn't find it. Issues weren't a part of it. It was all about imagery. Everything is about imagery. It's not about the substance of ideas that actually work.
No.
And so, you know, and I think it's a great example of what you and I have always said. Politicians do reflect the people that vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
A party does reflect the people that support that party. We hear all the time, the party and these politicians don't work for the best interests of the people. Yeah, they do.
Right.
Sure they do. Maybe not you, but you wouldn't vote for them. The people that vote for them think it's great.
Well, and that's it. I mean, if you have a number of people, enough people along the way that are willing to vote for them, that's where you get that, and then they start supporting the ideas beyond their time in office. If you were to do a poll, I guess, after Election Day of 2018, I would love to see a poll amongst those Democrats in terms of, like, her rating, right? AOC. What would her rating be, right? Favorability. And I understand it's not fair because she hasn't served any time, but keep in mind she was getting a ton of media. And just general favorability in terms of the promise that she brings to the party, right?
Mm-hmm.
The things that she had discussed, if there were any things. Now, fast forward to where we are right now. Between the Green New Deal and the Amazon thing, that's... to believe, and there are a lot of people on our side that say, oh, well, she's going to be gone. Even if she's voted out next year, she's not gone. Beto O'Rourke didn't win.
I don't believe she will be voted out next year.
Yeah, I don't think she will be either. But even if that were to happen, if you believe that energy is going to go away, I mean, unless she winds up in jail...
in the minds of many Democrats, she has accomplished in a month and a half what most Democrats, this is what they're thinking, accomplish in their whole lives. Why? She stood up to Amazon and the Green New Deal, and she goes after Trump.
Well, she's the activist and the rock star.
She's the activist and the rock star, yes.
You could make the point where
I like that.
Bernie is, you know, certainly the old school activist. Rock star?
Well, he might be able to play with Zeppelin.
Yeah, well, or Keith Richards. But if you look at, I mean, he became kind of a rock star. There was some of that from the young demographic in 2016. But let's face it, that was about free college.
Yes.
That was about free stuff.
Yes.
With her, she's got the rock star appeal, and she's the activist. And now she's got a record of offering the Green New Deal. And yes, we know we can tear it down very clearly. People don't care. Hey, if they don't care where we're at right now, the reality of $22 trillion in debt, remember the debates we used to have of when they would vote to raise the debt ceiling? Remember that?
Seems so cute. Completely so meaningless. That's the best word. Weren't they cute?
Weren't they cute?
They were so cute.
No, but back then we knew it was just a sham.
Yeah.
Because, and then, you know, the Obama administration, well, just because we raise it, that doesn't mean we're going to use it. You're funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So we need to replicate a million more Obamas.
Hey, Dad, I'm going to hold on to your credit card. I'm not going to use it. I just need to hold on to it. Why do you need to hold on to it? I'm not going to use it. Then you don't need to hold on. I need to hold on to it. I'm not going to use it. But those, we knew at that time, they're meaningless. And if you're not willing to stop now, if you're not willing to do something about it now, and we said it years ago, then we'll never be willing to do anything about it until the inevitable happens. We said, well, why raise it? At the time, I think we were talking about $18 trillion. Man, that was so
well. I go back to what I said yesterday, and I think this is my thought of the year, even though we're only into March. And I was driving in yesterday and just thinking and looking at my car and all the instruments and my cell phone and the road that I was on and all the buildings around me. And I started thinking about, you know, the society that we live in and that people have to actually live in the real world and get things done and they can't make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the roads and the civil engineers. They can't make mistakes. I was looking at the architecture of all the different buildings. They can't make mistakes. They have to know what they're doing. I think about everybody, the millions of different parts and ingredients that go into building a car and a cell phone and everything that I was in yesterday. And everybody has to do things right. They can't mess up. They've got to do it right. People can't be BSing each other. BS has to stop somewhere. And then I think about all the other people that are out there doing things. Engineers, the construction workers, plumbers, electricians, none of them can do anything wrong. They've got to get it right. In order for our society to exist, you got to do things right. You can't BS. And then what do? The most important people that we have to direct our society, these same people who can't do anything wrong in their real lives, they have to get things right, will listen and buy into the most biggest BS statements ever. And I wonder why.
You're at a drive-thru. You order the burger. They give you nuggets.
You're livid.
It's wrong. Send it back.
You're livid.
No, that is a burger. No, it's not. It's clearly nuggets.
No, it's a burger.
It's a burger.
Right. Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Okay. Hey, honey. He says it's a burger.
Well, that's a great analogy.
This is because...
That's a great analogy.
If And I'm telling you, is there any greater fury? Dang it. They got one time I went to a place and I ordered the burger that particular burger they had on the menu came with mayo. And I don't mind mayo, but on that day I didn't want mayo. ordered it with no mayo. This thing came out. It's as if they took the burger patty and marinated it in mayo and then put mayo on both buns. I'm not joking. It was like a sick joke. And I was like, are you kidding me? And it said on the I said, okay, okay, maybe you heard extra mayo, right?
Right.
On the ticket, on my receipt, no mayo. It says it. N-O, mayo. Oh, man. Now, I was traveling in my car. I was already out of town, right? Because I went to another town where I was going to gas up and then sit while I was gassing up and eat my burger. Oh, I went back. I backtracked another 20 minutes and went back. And I said, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That wasn't an important thing in my life. I could have thrown away the burger and been just fine. You think about all the massive things that the government has control of and where they're taking us. It's not just one item. It's not just this burger that you can throw away.
Right.
It's the stuff that is going to be a part of your life, your kid's life, and it's not going to be reversed at any turn. And they're handing it to you saying, that's a burger when it's clearly chicken nuggets. Right.
And then and we buy it.
And we're going, okay.
And we celebrate it. And, right. And to me, that's the great. Now, I can't separate the two, which is probably why I do this as my profession. I can't separate the two, and I'm always going to call it out.
Right.
What is it about the people that they have come to understand that a real society cannot run that way, that you can't BS, that in order to produce the society that we have today in the private sector, there may be BS in management or whatever, or there may be BS in the meetings, but when it comes down to actually producing the part, you can't do that.
Right.
It can't work that way. In order to assemble it, you can't work that way. All that crap has to go away, and the only thing that matters is the real world in architecture, in plumbing, in design, in construction.
Right.
It all matters. And then the people that run the country that are supposed to make the laws and everything else are completely devoid of any of that reality. And not only do we accept it, but we will vote for a politician. And when they BS us, instead of calling them on it, we will accept it.
Yep.
Why? Why? When the burger that you ordered that you can't get mayonnaise on or that you don't want mayonnaise on, they put mayonnaise on, it infuriates you.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they, would we ever accept if you ordered a cheeseburger and they gave you nuggets and you said, I ordered a cheeseburger and they said, this is a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
You would never accept, and we accept it from the people that take money from us.
Yeah.
And we don't see a direct return when we give them that money. There is no direct return like there is in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And they can tell us anything that we want and we accept it. Why is that? What is it about human nature that makes it where you and I would never accept it? And we call, and we talk about this all the time. That's why whether it's Trump or any Republican, we have no problem calling them out. And we wonder why Republicans have problems. And we do realize that part of it is, well, if I insult the guy that I vote for, then it gives fuel to the other side. We said, no, it's not, because you don't want to be like them. You want to be intellectually honest, and you want your party to be intellectually honest. You don't want to be the way that they are. That's the last thing that you want to, you should want to be. And still, you can tell them that, and they still won't do it. Why is that?
Want to live in the fantasy.
Why?
Well,
look, you know, I have the shirt on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I have, look, see?
Oh, yeah, we're doomed.
I wore the T-shirt tonight, the We're Doomed T-shirt. I have a We're Doomed T-shirt. So
yeah,
I have,
right.
So we're all doomed to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we have to BS each other? We all know we're going to die. So mm-hmm. Why do we got to BS? Why do we have to lie? Why can't we tell the truth?
Right.
Why do we have to sit there and call somebody like Ocasio Cortez? Why does anybody have to call her a genius and a great intellect when everybody knows it's true? She's an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
She has no idea how the world works at all.
Right.
Why do we have to do that?
Because it makes us feel better about ourselves. Joey Pants in the Matrix.
You're right.
I know.
You're right.
I know, this is not steak. I know. I'm not sitting here eating steak. But ignorance ignorance is bliss. I can sit here all day and chew on this and in my mind pretend it's steak. My mind thinks it's steak. I've been convinced it's steak. I know it's not. It's not a cheeseburger. It's nuggets. But guess what? I'm going to call it a cheeseburger.
866. If you dare want to get into the discussion, try, because I'm not even sure where we're going. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
60.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the top of the hour, we'll tell you about the Hawaii politicians that want to get rid of the Second Amendment. They're petitioning Congress to get rid of this. Well, the only way they can petition Congress is to try to get a constitutional amendment process to get rid of the Second Amendment.
Right.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Why don't you try that? I suggest you try that going into 2020.
If they could please, to our friends in Hawaii that are for this, please wait until, I don't know, November of this year maybe, to start the process so that it can start, being a matter of discussion right around, I don't know, January or February.
Yes.
Next year in a big way.
Make the big push.
Yeah, yeah.
To get rid of the Second Amendment this fall, but really highlight it going into the spring year from now.
Make sure you demonize the non-criminal gun owners, too, when you do that. Because that you got to. That's part of the playbook and the rulebook.
We encourage you.
Yeah, please. And be very loud about it.
Yes.
This is Red Eye Radio. On Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. It's a Friday show, so we got to sort of clean the desk, don't we? So I don't got to carry stuff home on the weekend, you know.
All right.
Or leave it here on the desk.
Well, what do you got?
Politico, my favorite headline yesterday, all right? And there were a lot of favorite headlines, but my favorite headline, there it is, Politico. Jack Schaefer's column, if you're afraid of Shep Smith, you probably shouldn't be president.
That's a fair point.
Why are the Democrats so scared of Fox News? Fox has not hosted a Democratic presidential debate in more than 15 years. In 2007, Democrats agreed to partner with Fox in a presidential candidate debate, but canceled after Fox chairman and CEO Roger Ailes cracked a rude joke about Barack Obama in his speech. In 2016, then when Fox News anchor Brett Baer pitched the then DNC chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz on giving Fox a shot at one of that cycle's Democratic debates, the prospect was still out of the question. You've had six debates so far, he said. I think you have four more on the books. How about letting the Fox News debate team handle one of those? Ha, 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 was her response. We've got a lot on our plate. She politely declined. And it's like, seriously, it's
a lot on the plate with, rigging it so that Bernie doesn't get the nomination.
Yeah, that's, that with her, There was a lot on the plate.
Yeah,
that was actually a truthful statement.
Yeah.
We got to figure out how not to let Bernie win.
Right. We're about to be exposed for that and all, there's a lot on the plate. So
Trump said, hey, payback will be he didn't say it that way, but that's what he meant. Like, how? What will the payback be for Trump?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, he won't agree to any presidential debate unless it's on Fox?
Well, you know, we kind of tossed this around earlier this week. I wouldn't put it past this president to say, no debates. No debates at all. Nah, we're not doing debates. You know where I stand. You know where they stand, whoever it is. I'm going to campaign. They're going to campaign. And there we are. No debates. I'll do rallies. They'll do rallies.
You know, there actually is a point there.
Mm-hmm. Well, because what are you going to have? A Candy Crowley making excuses for, you know, the person on the left and then trying to go back and correct it? What are you going to have, CNN?
But why aren't you going to do that, though? Why is everybody always going to agree to debate? Because there is that 10% of people out there
that you have to convince,
that remain undecided and have no clue as to what's going on until the last couple of weeks because, frankly, they don't pay attention and they vote. That's why you will always agree to a debate, because your point is to convince the majority of those people, because you need every vote you possibly can get, even in a presidential election.
Do three debates. All of them in October. Do three.
Well, most of them, I mean, the presidential debates, what, are usually September and October? One or two in last September and then two in October?
You usually have one. Do you not have one in August?
No. Because normally you're just coming right out of the
conventions,
At the convention at that point. So normally I think they're September and October.
Yeah. Then they're do not, three in October.
Yeah, not like the primary. I mean, the primaries, I mean, they'll be running those this summer. Right, June. A couple of months away from the first
three different debate. Stages, like Lollapalooza. Right.
Yes.
There'll be too many to do one big stage.
Oh, yeah,
actually,
they can.
I'd love to do one big stage. Let all of the craziness be on full display for all of America.
Well, for us, it's all just entertainment.
That's the only reason I said that.
I mean, that's all it is.
I just want the Democrat to do something that's going to entertain me.
Well, the Democrat debate, who disagrees on anything? Where is the, you know, where, look, you can look at the Republicans and you can say the Trump and Rand Paul can have a debate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
Because they disagree on it. Tell me what the major issues that the Democrats disagree on right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, because Biden, we have no idea where he stands on anything. He's been gone for a while, and any politician who's been a Democrat who's been out of the public limelight, because he really has, even remember, he just promoted what Obama thought. We have no idea where Joe stands on anything, because Joe really hasn't sat down and said, here's what I believe on the issues of today in 10 years, in over a decade. We really don't know where he stands on anything. So until he comes up, what do the Democrats disagree on? Mm-hmm. They're all for the insanity of the Green New Deal. If they're all for that insanity, then who is a moderate non-socialist? And there isn't it. So to me, that's going to be the great thing is, will they be debating? And I made it as a joke yesterday, but part of me is serious. Is one of the reasons that they want all friendly networks is because Fox will actually ask them the specifics of what they believe on the issues. And if they disagree on anything, and the last thing they want to do is debate with each other, they simply want to debate Trump, and Trump won't be there. Because it's the primary. That it'll simply be each candidate debating how they disagree with Trump. That what we have said all along, that it won't be about debating each other, because where would they debate?
Well, first of all, you have to, the only debate will be how much one hates Trump more than the other. And they'll, I don't know, try and quantify that somehow.
Well, for example, I don't believe that there should be, and probably most Republicans believe, there should be no basic income. All right? Well, where are you going to go? Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, Andrew Yang. All right, so you want $1,000 a month in basic income. Harris, you want $500, and Corey, you want, was it the thing where you go up to 18 years of age and can collect $50,000? There is no ideological difference. It's simply in the amount. There's nobody that will be stating, no, we're not going to do that. The debate's going to be simply a nuance and how much free stuff people should get. It's not that people shouldn't get free stuff for the sake of getting free stuff. It'll be what amount of free stuff should they get.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's I don't see it being a very productive debate season.
I
just don't see it going anywhere. I don't know why even the president, they did what, three or four in 2016 between Hillary and Trump. The entire season had like 4 million. Between the primary and the presidential mm-hmm. season. But what are you going to... The whole point of the debate will be either trying to one-up each other. Is Kamala Harris going to say, oh, no, I don't want that. I want to give you this. My plan will give you this. My plan will give you more. My plan will give it to the adults. My plan will give it to this group or that group. My plan will, it'll be the battle for how much they hate Trump. And then beyond that, it'll be the battle for how much they can give away. Because when you look at the whole universal income, basic living income, whatever it's going to be, this is where it's gone from. It's gone from the basic living wage, right? Of they were pushing $15 an hour. $15 an hour, that's so cute. But what was it in exchange for work? Minimum wage. Well, no. You shouldn't have to work. This is what I said about free college. What's next? What's next with free college is, well, no, you should get everyone should just go to college, no grades. Just attend. Everyone gets the same degree. Everyone gets, okay, you attended for 4 years. Here, you get something. It's a participation trophy, right? Tell me that's not for the basic living wage, for the basic right. income. That's a participation trophy.
A participation degree guarantees yes. you a living wage.
Tell me why not.
I like that.
Yes.
Tell me
why not. Why wouldn't they go there? Because you shouldn't have to go and earn the grades. It's wrong for them to grade you against someone else.
Yeah.
Because
who are they to grade?
Well, you can't have a valedictorian, can you?
No, you can't do that anymore.
You can't do that
no.
anymore.
No.
So look at the idea behind that. Break that down.
And that really upset me because I was really close to that in high school.
Right. Yeah. Actually, I was if it weren't, well, for personality conflict with one teacher. By the way, I put that on myself.
No, I wasn't close.
Apparently, you're not supposed to burn things in class.
Moving to sports.
Mm-hmm.
And
Let's check sports, everybody.
Good afternoon, sports fans. Biff Bar from the Biff Bar for Sports Spotlight. That's an old Carlin bit. Bryce Harper, who signed the 10-year, thirteen-year, $330 million contract last week with the Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah. Why did he sign with the Phillies? Did you see this? Why didn't he sign with the California team?
Because of taxes.
Taxes.
Yes. He gets to keep more of his money.
I'm not kidding you.
Mm-hmm.
As they say here, Pennsylvania, 3.07% income tax. Apparently across the board is what I get here from the LA Times.
Okay.
His tax rate would top out at 13.3%. That's a 10% difference.
Yeah, you take in California. Yeah.
Right. You take out the $330 million, why he didn't sign with the Dodgers or Giants.
Right.
You take the $330 million, and they basically say it's another year's salary for him. It was the largest free agent deal in the history of North America sports. There was a ton of publicity on that. Harper will save tens of millions in taxes by signing with the Phillies instead of a California team. With a contract of that magnitude, it's dramatic. It could be almost a full year's compensation. The Giants reportedly offered 12 years and $312 million. But they were told they need to ante up more to compensate for California's tax hit. The taxes actually came into the negotiations. They said game-changing stars have the ability to choose teams in low-tax states, even in no-tax states like Texas and Washington. To what extent, this is from the LA Times now, to what extent do California sky-high taxes drive away professional ball players? Said agent John Boggs, it's a red light. I've had players in the past say they don't want to go to certain states because they're going to get hammered by taxes. Obviously, that affects the bottom line.
There you go.
So,
yeah. And you can't blame someone. I mean, an entire year's and worth of salary, and not a small salary at that.
Well, I remember when you and I talked a few years back about, you know, when Phil Mickelson was criticized, saying mm-hmm. he might want to move from California when mm-hmm. they started increasing the taxes, and he got blasted by it.
Right.
But then you and I actually did the figures over a 10-year period with what he makes. And we said it could be anywhere between, he would lose between $50 and $100 million, which at that time, remember, he was interested in buying part of a ball team.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, if you're doing financial planning and you wish to have that kind of money to participate and buy into something big, that's going to factor into it.
Right.
$50 to $100 million, even if you're making $50 to $100 million a year, you don't throw away $50 to $100 million just because you're making it every year.
Right.
If you know that you can say that over a period of 10 years, you're going to do everything possible to do that. Who wouldn't?
Right.
Oh, and the other thing is the billionaire lottery winner came forward.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, we forgot to mention that, yeah.
$877 million taxes, the one-time payment. They're remaining, as they should, anonymous.
Yeah.
So they did it right. Yeah. They had up until, what, April to claim it, and they claimed it.
I wonder if they moved to a different state.
Right.
In that time.
Well, the earnings would still be in that state, but then everything else in terms of interest that you might make from
interest
investment.
That you pay, right.
Hopefully they will do it right, and they won't. It won't end up in a horror story like some of the other stories in the past that have been profiled, people winning a ton of money and it leading to really bad things for them.
Yeah, I'd be pretty bummed out if I won the lottery and won $100 million and 10 years later I had nothing.
Right, yeah. I mean, but
that doesn't put you in a positive mindset.
There have been plenty of people that have won millions and then next thing you know, it's gone because they didn't plan. They didn't think about it. They wanted the things and they wanted to tell all their friends and family how much money they had. Never a good idea.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Manafort getting 47 months in prison, 9 months taken off for what the judge said he wants, 9 months he's already served
yeah.
as time served.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, he's got a separate illegal lobbying case in a D.C. court.
Yeah, he's already pleaded guilty to that one.
Now, it was way beneath what the prosecutors wanted.
Up to 24 years, according to their guidelines. And Judge T.S. Ellis, the third, saying, no, that's way out of line. And basically making the comment that anyone who's, if you think differently, you should just spend any time at all in a federal prison. But Manafort is 69 years old, and of course a 24-year prison term would be life in prison. He was in a wheelchair. He's suffering from gout, they said. But, so 47 months. A lot of the media, I think, surprised by that. Here is your forecast.
Some significant winter weather is expected over the next 24 to 48 hours from two different systems that'll be moving through the Midwest, Great Lakes, and Northern Plains states. We'll use I-70 as a dividing line, and south of there we'll see all rain. North of 70, we'll see snow, but there is a band of mixed precip that will be a problem today from portions of northern Nebraska and southern Iowa. And as we move through the day today and get into Saturday, we'll see that situation continue for mixed precip in portions of central Illinois moving over to central Indiana. Look for a lot of the major cities in the south, including Atlanta, under the threat of showers through Sunday. In the West, we'll get some much-needed drying in California beginning tomorrow. Snow remains in the higher elevations of the central and southern Rockies. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Show.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Other news here, we got to clear the desk here on the Friday. A group of Hawaii state legislators wants Congress to repeal the right to bear arms or at least specify that it is not an individual right. Huh. The resolution filed Tuesday in the Hawaiian Senate is backed by freshman state Senator Stanley Chang, best known for defending the chamber's last Republican in 2016, defeating the chamber's last Republican in 2016. Chang's measure, which has four co-sponsors, would request Washington discuss either scrapping the Second Amendment altogether or clarifying that it only applies to organizations such as state militias.
Well, but Congress can't do that.
No,
they can't clarify something. That's done in the courts.
Right.
I mean,
well,
if
Congress can't,
for,
no, Congress,
they can't redefine the Constitution.
Right. Congress cannot clarify the Constitution.
No, that's done in the courts.
They can clarify their own legislation.
Yes, what they have written.
Right.
Otherwise, you're looking at repealing the Second Amendment. And go ahead, try, please.
Chang,
ramp this up.
A Honolulu attorney who studied law under now U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Oh. Hmm.
Do we know that? Because he put that on his resume, and would you put that on your resume? Throws rocks at the U.S. Supreme Court's 2008 Heller ruling that the Second Amendment protected an individual right to arms.
Oh, sorry.
So there you go. Under this individual right theory, the United States Constitution restricts legislative bodies from prohibiting firearm possession. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works. So, don't know where he's going on it because the article doesn't really clarify, because it would do nothing if Congress stated that we disagree with the Constitution. Well, then you'd have as much weight as their We Hate Hate resolution from yesterday.
Yeah, it does nothing.
It's meaningless.
Although, if they're going to do that, please do it between now and November of next year.
We suggest, and we stand by the Hawaii state legislators on this, we suggest that Nancy Pelosi start talking about this, get Schumer aboard, and say we're going to introduce legislation that says that we disagree with the Second Amendment. And that the Second Amendment should be repealed, or the individual right to possess a firearm should be repealed. Even if it is only a declaration that it could not affect the Second Amendment, we don't care. We believe that you should stick to your gun, stick to your conscience on this one,
right,
and promote it heavily as we go into the 2020 midterms. Excuse me, 2020 election, not midterms.
Right.
2020 election, yes.
We would support that, too, that if you're going to do that, be honest and apply it to yourself. No lawmaker would also be able to hire anyone to carry a gun and protect them.
Yes, yes. Since we're going in that direction, we would agree with that also.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would like to see them, in fact, be one of the... I'd like to see them have that as one of their core elements at the DNC, at the convention next
summer. No armed security at the DNC.
No armed security.
Yes.
And in front of America, declare that they are looking to repeal the Second Amendment.
Right.
Please.
And announce at the DNC that this is the first gun-free DNC that even the guards and possibly the Secret Service announce that nobody is armed.
Yeah. Right.
See, we're even more progressive because we're taking it a step further than they're even willing to go.
Mm-hmm.
That makes us, we care more about what? I'm not sure, but
we're the station that cares.
We care more. But.
Yeah. Make that a part of the party platform.
So we stand by the Hawaiian lawmakers, and we believe that you should promote this heavily and get Nancy to talk about it all the time between now and the 2020 election.
If you're thinking in terms of what the tactics might be for the Trump campaign, and Mr. President, if you're listening, we would say the following. Step outside of your own wheelhouse and point out time and time again along the way, and I know this is done at campaign stops and rallies, but point out what the party is doing, not just what your opponent is proposing on debate stages and every time you get a chance. It's what I think worked for the president. He did some of that, I guess, in 2016 as a candidate. But if you do that right now, more and more, I think it resonates because there are things you can...
No, that's a good
you
point.
Can certainly back up the items that they have done since he's been president. And my goodness, between now and next year, who knows what else you can add to that list. But... you've won on border security. You're still winning on border security. So you talk about all the other ideas that they're proposing, their behavior as a party. Because, you know, it's one thing when we talk about a legislator in Hawaii or Kamala Harris during the Kavanaugh thing. If you believe that doesn't reach outside of your state or your district, you're wrong. Because you're talking about those, as you mentioned, Gary, the whole, a little while ago, the whole point of the debate really is about that 10%, or maybe even more, right, in the middle that you're trying to convince the people.
Right.
At the
right.
last minute you're trying to convince.
Right. But it's really the 20% of independents.
Right.
That you're trying, 20, 30% of independents. That you're trying to convince.
And you point out time and time again, because Kamala Harris was safe in her state and behaving the way she did. Nancy Pelosi Ocasio-Cortez, they're safe in their districts, you know, as far as we know with Ocasio-Cortez. I think it's the case right now for Nancy. And they can behave that way, but what isn't factored in is how it affects the presidential election, how it affects the sentiment of the American voter that don't live, the voters that don't live in their states, that right. don't live in their districts,
well,
and the effect on the party itself,
well, no,
how it reflects.
No, I think you should always promote things like, you know, what the Hawaii lawmakers are doing,
exactly.
because these are mainstream Hawaiian lawmakers.
Yes.
Yeah, they're more Democrat there, but still these are mainstream Democrats that are proposing that we get rid of the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. And you should point that out. I mean, in your travels, as you talk to people, say, look, I mean, Hawaii, you had the members of the state Senate that are introducing a bill that they wish to get rid of the Second Amendment to the United States. That's not in the mainstream. That's the growing Democrat Party.
Right.
In the explanation, you should have this being brought up consistently.
Right.
We have said this over and over again, and we get less debate on it now from people because we have often said that, look, the media doesn't control things. And right. you have the ability to get out there as a party yourself. Now, you may not get support from the media. They may not endorse you or promote what you believe. But the president, if the president goes out there and says something, it's going to be covered. It's going to be covered every time. And so the president should do it. Those around the president should do it. And it should be a campaign that you have to be more laser focused as you get closer to 2020. But all the time, the president should be directing, because the president is the leader of his party. The president's administration should be getting together with legislative leaders and saying, look, this is where they stand. This is where they're going. These are the issues. Look what's going on in this legislature. We need to get this out there. We need to promote not only to our base, but to independents out there where we stand and as opposed to the opposition. And we need to be as current event on these issues that the media won't cover every day.
Right.
And so if we bring them up, then they've got to fact check it to see if it happened. And so you do that. And the fact is, you can market yourself and the issues that you stand for. And you can successfully market the issues that the other side stands for,
right.
but in a negative way.
Right.
And you should do that.
And you could do it with the facts.
Yeah.
Because, right. you know, when you do that, and then the, you know, liberal media clearly is going to jump out and fact check you, that works for you in that way as well. Unless they just want to lie about it.
Well, and we see they're willing to do that.
They're willing to do that. We right. understand that. And so,
but you're
nonetheless,
not,
you're going to win.
But you're going to win with independence. That's where you win.
Exactly.
Because if they lie, they get caught by the independents. You're not yep. trying to convince. Look, you're not trying to convince. It's like Ocasio-Cortez and the Green New Deal. All the Democrat nominees for president right now, all the candidates, I won't say nominees, all the candidates right now support the Green New Deal. Well, you're not going to change the mind of those six Hillary supporters yesterday.
Mm.
You're not trying to change their minds. They're going to sit there and say Ocasio-Cortez is the most intelligent, dynamic politician to come across a Democratic Party in the last 50 years. The average independent knows that's a pile of, well, as Dad would say, poop for the peasants.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's why you have Republicans. They should go after her, because all the arguments now are falling away. Remember, even a month or two ago, it was, why are you, even the media, why the conservatives are obsessed with Ocasio-Cortez? Well, yeah, they weren't obsessed with it, but they covered her. Why? They weren't obsessed, but they realized that the Democrats and the left of the Democrat Party was obsessed with her, and the media was obsessed with her, the liberal media was obsessed with her, and they were just observing that and then stating, what does she believe, and why do they support it? And that's all.
Yeah.
But again, remember, the left has to demean even the fact when you attempt to communicate a message that you communicating a message in somehow is immoral, or you lack a certain character standard for wishing to discuss in the arena of ideas something that someone on the other side is proposing. They have to demonize everything because they can't demonize you on the substance of the argument. So they will demonize everything surrounding it.
Well, they sponsor the Green New Deal and then scorn the majority leader for wanting to bring it up for a vote.
Yeah. Or scorn when you bring up parts of it. Well, no, that wasn't a serious part of it.
Right.
Well, you're making stuff up as you go along now.
Are you sponsoring it or not? Do you mean it or not?
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye. If you would like to get in, we would love to hear from you. New York businessman and Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang believes his transformational universal basic income proposal, which would give every American over the age of 18 $1,000 per month, is not part of a socialist platform.
Huh?
I'm a CEO and business person, and I tell you that putting money into the hands is people's hands is good for business, it's good for the economy, and it's good for markets.
Does his company pay anyone who does not work for them?
No.
Do they send?
I don't believe so.
Do they send people checks for doing nothing?
No. But it is socialism.
Of course it is. Private sector knows that. He knows that in the private sector being
well
this, but what they want you to believe is what he wants to do is, and this is what's interesting. You and I have talked about capitalism over the years and how that you do have liberals on, well, they're all over CNBC and they try and justify it over and over again. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's guilt. I have no idea what drives them to just ignore the very principles of capitalism and try and justify it by saying, oh, I'm a business person. I know what I'm talking about. Well, clearly, you don't know what you're talking about or you're lying.
Well, I mean, we know what the definition of, you know, controlling means of production, you know, with socialism. Mm-hmm. Is controlling the means of production. You can do that various ways, including confiscating wealth from others and giving it to others just for the transfer of wealth. And that's what he would do here. Mm-hmm. And that is actually the definition of socialism, because controlling the means of production you can do by controlling capital. Mm-hmm. By controlling more of the capital is, in essence, what socialism actually is by its definition. Yeah. And so you can sit there all you want. We're gonna hear this from Democrats, though. They're going to promote socialism and then say it isn't because they believe it isn't. Well, it doesn't matter if you're a businessman. You can still be a socialist. Many businessmen are socialists.
Yeah, sure.
Or are a greater degree socialist from other people that are not business people and do not promote as socialist ideas.
Yes. Kamala Harris talked about how, well, no, I'm not a socialist. And then went to espouse socialist views.
Yes.
In the following sentence. Okay, keep saying you're not, but you really are.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.